Hi, I'm Marlo Higgins, and I spent nearly four decades as an entrepreneur building systems that maximize time and results. I'm a business coach that helps entrepreneurs get crystal clear on what it takes to make their vision a reality. I'm obsessed with clarity because business operations that are rooted in clarity are exponentially more likely to succeed. So join me as I explore the proven habits and strategies that have helped myself and hundreds of other entrepreneurs create a vision, execute a plan, and refine a legacy of success. This is 22 Motivational Minutes with Marlo. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for connecting.
Sure.
And I would love to record an episode about legacy, you know, and all the various things that you've done.
Sure.
How does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense, and especially since you, you did that piece with Joseph Reed, you know, the legacy of that. And it's kind of interesting. I've with some of the folks that I've worked with, that both in my private sector life and in my public life as a elected official, it's been interesting that I've made a lot of connections. And I have a good friend of mine that's on the city council with me, and he is. We were in D.C. and I ran into somebody. Actually, just literally, we were there with a group of folks out of the Des Moines Partnership, and there was probably 180 of us there, and we were walking down one of the streets, and I just happened to pass somebody I knew, and we said hello and started talking. And this friend of mine, who I've only known now for about 5 years, he just shook his head and goes, "I can't believe you ran into somebody in D.C. you knew." So my grandkids are convinced I know everyone. So it's kind of one of those things where it's the partnerships and the relationships you form as an individual. So
absolutely.
Have those relationships and they carry on into later life. And I can just give you a quick story, if you don't mind here for a second.
Absolutely.
On that partnership trip we were on, we had a luncheon, and at the luncheon, one of the gentlemen from the USDA spoke to the group. He was the undersecretary for rural development. And since we are considered quote unquote rural here in this part of the state, although we're close to Des Moines, but we're interested in taking a look at what opportunities we have with USDA for funding of police and fire and things like that. He introduced his chief of staff, and her name was Sarah Deitch. And I thought to myself, I wonder if that's the Sarah Deitch that was my legislative assistant in the State House in 1997, 98, I guess it was. Sure enough, it was. And so we'd been trying to get a hold of USDA here in Iowa and a couple of other things. And so after the thing, I walked up and I saw Sarah come out, and I said, "Sarah," and she looks at me and she goes, "Steve, what the heck?" And I said, well, it's good seeing you, but I was wondering if I could have you get the Des Moines and the Iowa delegates for USDA to get a hold of us. I mean, not literally an hour after we met, I had this whole slew of emails from people here in the state of Iowa that work for the USDA wanting to know how I knew them and what they could do for us. And so it's just kind of one of those things. It's the connection. You ever read Malcolm Gladwell? Have you read any of his things?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah. You know, and he has that one, it escapes me at the moment, but he has that one book that talks about there's five different personalities in life and the connector. And that's kind of what my job is, I think, is connecting people.
Super connector. How does that play into your legacy as being a super connector? Like, what's the value of being a super connector and understanding that that's a real core piece of success?
Well, I'm not a real religious person, but we had a very frustrating week here in Indianola on city council with some things that came up. And I was sitting in church on Sunday, and one of the things that came out of that experience sitting there on Sunday listening to the sermon happened to be Matthew 13. And he talked about that. That's the section that talks about sower of seeds and the good seed and sowing the good seeds. And I've got to tell you that I think along the line, if you treat people properly, you respect them, you listen to their opinions, you don't dismiss folks and do things that are generally good people skills, that you can lay that groundwork for the good seed. And all you have to do is just to start connecting people with different things. I don't know about you. Most of my jobs have been through connections. I mean, you and I we got through a connection here.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you that probably all except the one job that I took in 2000 that got me out of teaching into the private sector, everything else has been through people I know. And in fact, the move from that job in 2009 to the folks that I worked for in New York was simply because of the connections I had through that job and my teaching. Every one of the teaching jobs except my first one were by people I knew. You know, I knew somebody in that school district that I was applying to and contact them, and they would, who knew me, and they would make, you know, make a personal recommendation to the superintendent and get an interview. And that was up to me then at that point. But
okay, so that brings a good point, though. So when you realize that that's the case, how do you live your life, Steve? Like, does that impact, because you're basically, you are your own best reputation in that. Is right. That something where you're cognizantly aware of? Do you understand what I'm saying there? I mean, like the importance of really having integrity.
Well, my dad drilled into me very early in life that you're only as good as your word, you know? And so you never try to do anything that you've made promises or people have expectations of you that you are not able to fulfill. In some cases, you're not able to fulfill those. You know, you don't oversell yourself. I'm not, in fact, I had a conversation with one of my council colleagues yesterday. You know, I don't really try to, hey, I'm the greatest. I do this, I do that, I do that. That's not me. You know, I don't put myself in the forefront. Like with my students, it was always trying to, you know, take them from where they were at that point in time to moving them forward, whatever that level was. If they were two grade levels behind in certain things, try to move them to a point that I try to get them caught up, but do the things that were important to them. It's not about me. It's about how you can make that best for that individual. And I think I got that through teaching and learning. And then as I talked, I sent that email to you, you know, in my life, finally at 53 years old, I kind of figured out, well, you know, I kind of have some skills that might be have some value here, but it takes time to figure that out as a human being. And I really do believe that. Again, I'm going to use a religious, and I'm not that, believe me, I'm not that religious, but it just happened to pop in my head here that you reap what you sow, you know, you really do. You say, lay that groundwork, and you make for friends and relationships, and you just walk indoors, you talk to people, and you be nice to people. And then when that happens, that it's reciprocated in a lot of ways. It's amazing what you find when you travel the country or travel the world, and you just, you know, treat people with respect. You get that back a lot of times.
Well, and that's the thing too, you'd mentioned, you know, you've been evaluating people and you're good at watching and listening, reading the body language, you know, learning things that they may or may not be saying. And I think that truly is a true super connector, you know, somebody who really understands at the core, you know, what makes people tick. And I think you find that fascinating. And so the more you're fascinated by that, like, then you're more in tune. You have the awareness like, oh my God, I'm actually evaluating them. And there's something about that, because that evaluation, the way that I see that too, Steve, is your ability to give them a mirror to look at.
Right.
You're able to reflect back to them what they're reflecting to you, and in a unique way where it really connects. Right. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm also evaluating, but not judging. I 100%. Think that's a critical component. I really don't think you judge people, because I'm kind of a storyteller too. I don't know if you've done any research on some of the stuff I've written. And so one of the stories I have is another good friend of mine who I served on the council with and was kind of a mentor to me when I was first on the council in the 1990s. And he said that his dad owned a car dealership here in town, and they sold automobiles. And the story was for him, and this has always stuck with me. He said that a gentleman walked in. He was obviously right off the farm. He had pig manure all over his boots. He had the rubber boots on. He had manure, and he smelled like manure. And none of the other salespeople wanted to deal with him, you know, simply because of how he looked. And didn't look like he was going to buy a car or vehicle or anything like that, kind of disheveled. And he was a young guy. His dad had just hired him. He was out of college. Put him in the showroom to sell cars. And he says, so I decided I'd walk up to him and see what he wanted. And sure enough, the guy says, looking at a car, and he says, I'll take this one. And he pulled out a wad of cash out of his pocket. And he said he didn't dicker on the car. He didn't do any kind of thing. It was a sticker price he paid for it. Got the car out, got out of the sent his wife home with a pickup, and he drove the car home in the clothes he had. So he said, you learn a lesson quickly. You don't judge people. So I've always kind of kept those stories with me too. So
absolutely. Yeah.
And it's just an amazing thing. And I don't think I mentioned to you, in 2015, my wife and I kind of followed my dad's footsteps through Europe in World War II. And he was wounded in the Battle of the Bulge and captured by the Germans and very severely wounded, taken to a place that he always called the German Nuns Retreat, which is basically an abbey that they had. The Catholic Church sold it to a private family in 1925 when the economy was going south in Germany. And they ran it from 1925 until today. They run it as a home for mentally, physically, and emotionally challenged kids. And they provide them skills, culinary skills, agriculture, all kinds of things. The doctor that operated on my dad, obviously a German doctor in the military, they developed some kind of relationship. And so the doctor gave my dad, the doctor was ordered to send my dad to a POW camp, and he kept him a couple days longer than he should have. Gave him a note and said, a piece of paper, and said, write me if you survive the war. Dad did that. Before we left, I'd written just a letter. I didn't know. I got this address. It was just a scrap of paper Dad had. And I wrote to this Dr. Ludwig Gruber via snail mail. And then like about 3 weeks before I left, I figured, well, you know, if they ever contact me, maybe we can do something. And I figured the guy was dead. I had Googled Dr. Ludwig Gruber, and there one popped up, different address. So I sent it to that address. I'm sitting in the Paris train station. My wife and I are getting ready to go to Normandy from Paris. And I get this, my phone buzzes, and it's an email from the Dr. Ludwig Gruber. I'm thinking it can't be the same guy. He's too old. He's dead. It was his son. They had a doctor's office in the town where they grew up, invited us to come and visit them and to spend an afternoon with them, which was the following Wednesday from our trip. So we changed our whole last half of our itinerary and went to visit those folks. The first thing they did, Marlo, is they slid the letter my dad had written back to that doctor in 1947, slid that paper across the table, because they said, have you ever seen the letter your dad wrote to our dad? And I said, no. And because he never wow. kept a copy. And I said, well, here's the letter your dad sent my dad in return the response to that letter. And they'd never seen that either. So I asked a question of the family. I said, your dad, who was in the 212th Volksgrenadiers that fought on the siege of Leningrad, over a million soldiers on each side was killed or wounded. I said, he must have seen literally thousands of soldiers go across his operating tables. And I said, he must have had letters from a lot of his people that he saved. And he said, the family said, both brothers we met, said, your father was the only one he ever wrote to. And so something at the end of the war must have clicked, and they developed some kind of relationship in the short time he was there. He did a procedure on my dad, never been done before. And when he came back to the States, they had to reopen him up again because they kind of created a hernia and a lot of medical issues. But they actually took photographs of what the doctor did because they'd never seen it done. And so it was pretty interesting and very interesting. But the really thing that gives me goosebumps every time I mention it is when we got back like at 5 in the morning, or we got back early that night, but we'd been up for like 22 hours or something, thought we'd sleep in, woke up at 5 in the morning, and about 8 o'clock, I asked my wife, do you want to go to church today? And she goes, oh, I suppose. So we went to church because we'd been up for 2 or 3 hours already. And we get there, and the sermon that day was Romans 15, verses 1 and 2, which talks about the sick shall, the well shall help the sick, and all those kinds of things about those things. And it kind of spoke to us. And in fact, it was a misprint in the bulletin for that day. It said actually the message was the same, but it was the wrong Bible passage. So I emailed the younger Dr. Ludwig Gruber, and I said, it's kind of amazing. It kind of speaks to me about Romans 15. And he went and dug up his dad's old New Testament. And this is what's going to get you really crazy. He emails me back and he says, you are not going to believe this. He says, but that section of his New Testament was underlined. And he said there was nothing else in the entire New Testament that was underlined except that section. So, I mean, it's just
serendipitous.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It was just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
I mean, just the story that you're telling right here, it's the story of, you know, your awareness, you're hyper aware. And I think that there's something to be said about that. Your ability to really connect in a very unique way, but then you're aware of the bigger scope of really what's happened or presented. And I think there's just something very powerful to be stated there. I think that's, you know, your ability to see it so differently. What advice would you have for somebody who's listening to that story there? What recommendations or advice would you have?
Don't be afraid to walk in any door. Don't be afraid to talk to anyone that you want to have a discussion with. Don't be afraid to step out of the box. It's a little bit out of the ordinary, and especially in not only your private life, but also in your public life. And I think I've never been afraid to walk into somebody's business if I had to do some business with them or didn't know who they were. One of the jobs I did the last 20 years was essentially walking into architectural engineering firms and construction companies and introducing myself and talking about some opportunities that we all could work with in a sales perspective. But at the same time, you just also have to do that in your own life. You have not to be afraid to approach somebody that you think may have value. You know, you can evaluate businesses. I mean, there's so many tools today that you go online, you can do things. But I think sometimes when we do that, we only get a small slice of the perception. We only get a small piece of what that person really is. And it's hard to look at it on a TV screen or a monitor or whatever the case is and say, I know that person. And until you actually meet them face to face. Listen, I've had in life, and I'm sure you have as well, and probably your listeners too, Marlo, is that there are, you've had some conflicts with people in the past over different things. And until you have a frank discussion about those things, whether it's positive or negative, you really can't get beyond those things. And you have to be able to have the wherewithal or the thought process and to say, okay, I want to go talk to this person and either set the record straight if it's an issue, or take that issue that we talked about and how can we make it become even more positive for either the company or for that individual or for whatever we're working with. And so I think a lot of times people have good intentions. Sometimes other things get in the way. One of the things our city manager keeps talking about is that we have a lot of discourse in this country about politics, but you know, what's the real passion and purpose that this person's trying to do? If it's for their own political power and their own self-aggrandizement, I guess, that's one issue. But if they're really there to try to make a difference and doing it for what we call the right reasons, that's what you got to find out. The problem is we don't do retail politics anymore. We don't do hand-to-hand discussions. We don't knock on doors. A lot of people don't. I do. But until you have that ability to talk with folks and really have that one-on-one conversation, again, it goes back to the evaluation. They see me in person or I see them in person. I think that sometimes changes perspective.
So here's a question for you, though. So the way that you're describing that, I fully believe in that, you know, fearless and have no, I've been in rooms before. I've been in meetings that I have no business being at, but I value, value myself enough to understand that I do effectively have a seat at that table and I don't question it. Okay. But what can you do? Because as you describe that, I fully understand, Steve, what you're talking about there. It's being fearless. Okay.
Yeah.
What allows people, it's like fearless / confidence in yourself and a belief in yourself. But how can that be achieved if it's not something that you naturally possess, like maybe yourself and myself? I mean, you're teaching, you know, you probably saw a student who wasn't as confident and you could encourage and say, hey, just be fearless, you know, bet on yourself, get in the room, ask for the raise, do those things. But how do you really make that a reality from your vantage point, your experience?
Well, from my experience, so I was somewhat of an introvert when I was in high school, and probably I was not with the in crowd, if that makes any sense. And so when I went to college, I actually
Is that what I'm hearing? I thought you really didn't give a damn?
No. It's not that I didn't give a damn. I did. I cared about people and everything else. But what the situation was is that I wasn't the leader of the pack. Okay. I was just one of the followers and those kinds of things. And so in a lot of ways, I mean, I went my own direction. It was interesting in high school. I was with the jocks, but I also could very well easily associate with the nerds, if that makes any sense. Okay. And so I was kind of a crossover, if that makes a further sense. But when I got to college, and I went to college here in my hometown, and some of my former classmates went there as well. But I lived on campus, and so I learned very quickly that I could be somebody different. I didn't have to be that same person that I grew up with people for 13 years in school from kindergarten through high school. And our school was big enough that I didn't know everybody. We had four elementaries that came together, but at the same time, I didn't have to be that same person anymore. I could be somebody else. I could actually be what I felt I could be. And so I got involved with the local fraternity here, and we did some great things and great projects in the community. And I just felt that I kind of blossomed. I have a grandson that's kind of that way right now in high school too. And I just told him, I said, listen, in fact, we'll go to his graduation this weekend, but I just said, listen, you know, you grew up with a lot of these kids in school, and whatever you are, you can make yourself become whatever you want to be when you go on and move into that situation. Anybody that moves into a new community does the same thing. It's just within what you want to do. But at the same time, there's people that just don't have those innate skills. And so my suggestion is, what do you want to be? You know, what's your passion? What makes sense to you? I read an article here recently in New York Times about some of the psychological things about student kids and what makes people become successful adults. And it's what they end up finding that they did when they were 10, 12, 13 years old that they really, really liked, and they got into that field, even though they may have studied astrophysics. If that's not what they're passionate about, if we go over here and do this, what we're passionate about, you become very successful. And I think
so true.
I'm passionate about young kids and kids. Obviously, I taught school for 23 years. And that's like with Joseph, when he was asked me to sign his form to get to drop out of school, I just told him, I said, don't become the man you hate. Become somebody that you really feel like you can do something with, you know? And he's had struggles in his life, but man, when he brought that back and reminded me of that, you know, in 2016 or so, and we reconnected, I mean, that was powerful. You don't realize the words you say, the things you say, and the impact they have on people, both positively and negatively. And I found out this week that I said something that somebody took incorrectly, and it's impacted negatively. So you got to be careful with that stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're coming into the close. You know, you're still an independent business consultant, writer, columnist, teacher for 23 years. You've served on city council, elected to the Iowa House of Representatives. I mean, so many accolades. I mean, what a delight. And thanks again for connecting about this. This is very, very powerful. So connection, it's at the end of the day, betting on yourself, having the confidence to do that, reading people, understanding who you want to be and where you can take that and make that your reality. I mean, all great lessons learned. So what a rich conversation. Thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I mean, it's been a delight following all of this, and it's been a delight following all the people that we've been able to connect with in life. I think that's really important too. So
absolutely. All right. Thank you. This is very nice. Thanks, Stephen.
Yeah, thank you.
Did you enjoy this topic as much as I did? If you're looking for more insights like these or have a question you'd like to hear about on future episodes, text me at 319-250-2682 or click the link in the show notes. Remember, the road to success is better with friends. Be sure to share this episode to reach your goals together. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, keep your path clear and your energy high.